The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. When the calendar turns to March, some of us think about baseball. Spring training is underway in Florida and Arizona, and these athletes, these incredible athletes who make unbelievable salaries, are down there very delicately protecting their health and swinging their bats and throwing the balls around and doing all that good stuff. And I used to be a huge baseball fan. I'm a lot less now, but back when I had an interview in 2001 with R.D. Rosen, I was still a big baseball fan. I was a Boston Red Sox fan, and so was he. He was also a Chicago Cubs fan. And if you are old enough to remember the year 2001, this was still a very dark period for both franchises. The Boston Red Sox had not won a World Series for many, many years, and neither had the Cubs. In fact, the last time the Red Sox had won, they had played the Cubs, and they had a guy on their team named Babe Ruth, who was a pitcher. This is before that great unpleasantness where the New York Yankees swooped in and turned Babe Ruth into the Sultan of SWAT. I interviewed R.D. Rosen, and he had a book out that had been reissued. It originally came out 40 years ago and won an Edgar Award. And it was a crime novel featuring a baseball player named Harvey Blissberg. The book was called Strike Three, You're Dead. Let's revisit this interview now on the Best of the Book Nook.
Good afternoon, Miami Valley. Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program today R.D. Rosen. His book, Strike Three, You're Dead, has just been reissued. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vic.
Richard, tell us the story of this book. Was this the first Harvey Blissberg mystery?
This indeed was the first mystery I wrote back in 1981. I actually started it during the baseball strike of 81, I think partly to supply myself with some baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And it was finally published in 84. And when became the first in what is now a series of five books, the fifth is to be published this fall. And this is, it won the Edgar, which surprised me as much as anybody, and kind of established Harvey a bit in the mystery world.
Wow, the Edgar, that's quite a prestigious award.
Well, you know, my theory is it's always better to get the Edgar than not get the Edgar. I didn't turn it down.
Okay. Now, Strike Three, You're Dead. This book takes place in the world of baseball, but Harvey Blissberg is a lot more than just an ordinary ball player.
Yes, because, of course, Harvey Blissberg is a kind of alter ego. I played baseball, organized baseball, till I was about 20, when I realized I really couldn't hit the best pitching, and I decided to become a writer, which I had already been doing for years. There was a kind of fork in the road. I either had to become much more serious about baseball or more serious about writing and academics, and I chose the latter fork. And Harvey is the version of me who could hit the curveball, I guess.
Okay.
And probably couldn't write as well.
Now, are you any relation to Al Rosen? He was quite a player.
No. I actually have a really good story about Al Rosen, which I may tell you someday.
Okay.
But I'm no relation. He grew up in South Carolina, and I got my name at Ellis Island. My grandfather got my name at Ellis Island.
One of those, no, this is too long, or we can't spell this, we're going to change
it. You
know
what? I can barely pronounce what my father's family's name was.
Mm.
So you can imagine that the customs officials, the immigration officials, had a hard time.
Harvey Blissberg is a guy who has had a pretty decent career. He's playing for one of the really great teams, the Boston Red Sox, and then suddenly his whole world gets turned upside down in the expansion draft. Now, explain to our listeners how that took place.
Well, I had to create a Major League Baseball team to avoid certainly some of the problems with naming actual teams and players. And I wanted to create my own sort of physical world in which I could operate. And I've always loved Providence, Rhode Island. I spent my freshman year in college there at Brown and then left. And Providence sort of remained in my mind this fantastic film noir environment, which at the time very few people were writing about. Since then, there have been some TV shows and things. So I created a team in a city where it's not likely there ever will be a major league team, although there are a lot of people in southern New England who would like one. And then I created a player, a Jewish outfielder, although I was an infielder. I made him a center fielder, and made him a guy about 30 who'd had a very middling career. Good glove, not great bat. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? And put him in a situation where at the age of 30, he was left unprotected in an expansion draft when the Providence Jewels, named because Providence used to be the costume jewelry manufacturing center in America, could select him. So the book really begins with the idea of a guy at the age of 30 being very much on the downside of his professional career, so unlike most of us, you know, who are still waiting to peak. And so I put a Jewish guy in my favorite city playing the sport I knew the most about, baseball, and then almost immediately had his roommate murdered, where Harvey found him in the whirlpool one morning, dead. And that was the premise of the first book. So in the first book, he's not a professional detective. He becomes a licensed private eye by book two.
Okay.
In book one, he's really what they call an amateur detective who, when the police investigation stalls, takes on the responsibility of finding out who killed his roommate.
Now, is he out of baseball by the second book?
Yes, by the second book, he's out of baseball. It seemed implausible to me that he would have another major crime to investigate while still in baseball so soon after the first one.
Now, Harvey is on a pretty mediocre team. Usually expansion teams don't do very well their first year or so. And this is a very odd setup here with this team. Nobody's quite sure who even owns the team in reality. In fact, there's a situation going on where it's sort of controversial because this is happening 20 years ago, and they're all upset because there's a woman in the dugout who seems to be doing some of the managing, and her husband's the manager.
I think it's pretty clear that the team is owned by a guy named Marshall Levy, who made his money in costume jewelry, owns the majority shares of this team, and his manager, who's like Harvey, a kind of ne'er-do-well baseball guy, has a very powerful wife who used to be in public relations, and lo and behold, she ends up, she's a meddlesome person who ends up sitting in the dugout, not all the time, but sometimes charting pitches. It's as if she doesn't trust her husband to manage the team properly. And with the, not permission, but the, not the permission of the owner, but he doesn't seem to object, she wanders into the dugout, takes a real interest in various ball players and a sexual interest in some, it appears. And certainly that's one of the things early in the book that catches Harvey's eye.
Now, we've seen a lot of changes in baseball since you wrote this book, primarily in the amount of money that players are paid. There have been some other more subtle changes, but one thing that seems to remain is baseball really is still an old-fashioned, good old boy kind of sport, don't you think?
Yes, although I do think because players are paid so much now, and free agency has spiraled upwards, and therefore ticket prices have spiraled upwards, the baseball is a game that's sort of pricing itself out of the middle class and working class market. You know, it used to be a place every family could afford to go a few times a year. Now, with parking included, it's got to cost you close to $200 to take your two kids and your wife to a ball game.
That's crazy.
And I think that's unfortunate because, you know, baseball always was the national pastime. It wasn't the upper class pastime. But greater minds than me have been thinking about how we can control the inflation in baseball and make it a more accessible sport.
Now, Harvey is actually having a pretty good year with Providence. He's flirting with a 300 average, and as the book begins, we're getting pretty close to the end of the season, aren't we?
Yes, I think we're in August, are we not?
I think so, yeah.
Not that Providence is going anywhere, but they can play the role of spoiler.
They're fighting it out with Toronto for last place.
Yeah, tooth and nail.
Yeah. And a theme in the book that I thought was very familiar was the Red Sox and Yankees are fighting it out for first.
Right, and Harvey, of course, who spent the previous 5 years with the Red Sox, has some, you know, strong feelings about that rivalry. It didn't seem fair to me to give Providence a expansion team that was also really great. I mean, that's implausible, and I think it was the essence of Providence to have a team that was struggling a lot. And, you know, I think early in the book I described the attendance at one game as being around 6,000, which reminds me of the attendance the Cubs used to get when I was a kid in Chicago in the late 50s and 60s. In September, there were games. I remember there was one game they had 298 people.
Wow.
So in a way, I think I may have imported some of my feelings about the Cubs and some of the reality of Cub baseball into, you know, Providence.
Without giving away the total plot, tell us what happens in this book, Strike Three, You're Dead.
You know, you should know better than to ask an author what happens in his own book. these mystery plots, you know?
It's hard to talk about it. Entice our readers to want to read it without telling them what happens.
Well, let me put it this way. The highest compliment I ever got from this book, well, actually a couple compliments from women who told me, I don't know a thing about baseball, and I really love this book. And they said that even though the solution to the crime has to do with a certain baseball statistic, which is explained in the book, and, you know, certain statistic-savvy readers may, in fact, start to guess it as time goes on. But I'm one of those people, and there are a lot of writers and readers of mysteries who feel the same way, who are much less interested in the mechanics of the plot than the, you know, the world you create. And, you know, it's like Raymond Chandler used to talk about writing where there's a sense of the country beyond the hill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the hill is the plot and the immediate action, that's great. And you really, you know, you need a plot that works mechanically and where the conclusion or the revelation at the end seems entirely inevitable. I mean, that's certainly something that I think is a mark of pretty good mysteries. But more important, I think, is to create a believable world. But to answer your question, what happens is Harvey, because he happens temperamentally to be the kind of guy who has to know the answer, starts to piece together details from the life of his roommate. He spends some time in his roommate's apartment. He starts to target certain people in the organization he thinks might know something about it, and finally figures out late one night what must have happened. And then, of course, that leads to a very baseball-y confrontation at the end of the book, which I will only say is interrupted by the sprinkler system at Providence Park going on. Otherwise, it might have been curtains for Harvey, and I would have had a one-book series.
Uh-huh.
But just at a key moment, the sprinklers start up.
Now, has this book been out of print?
Yes, this book has been out of print for quite a while, and I think one thing that stimulated my publisher to reissue it was named last year to a list of the century's 100 favorite mysteries, whatever that is. The list was compiled by the people who run mystery bookstores in America and Canada.
Well, that's another big honor, isn't it?
Well, it's nice. It's nice to be remembered, you know. The book had stayed alive, you know, through mystery lovers and mystery conventions and secondhand bookstores. But sadly, it had been out of print for a while, and I, you know, couldn't be happier that it's back in print. The intervening books took Harvey into the worlds of college basketball recruiting. That's a book called Fadeaway. Then a book called Saturday Night Dead, which is based somewhat on my brief experience, writing for Saturday Night Live in the 80s. And that involves the murder of an executive producer of the show, while Harvey is there babysitting the guest host.
Uh-huh.
And then the fourth book, called World of Hurt, takes place in Chicago. It's my Midwestern book, where Harvey comes back to Chicago because his brother, who teaches English at Northwestern, plays basketball in the Y with the guy who ends up murdered in one of those McMansion developments in the suburbs of Chicago. Okay. Nobody can solve the crime.
Okay.
So he coaxes Harvey back to Chicago to solve that one.
Now, I don't know if this typically comes with the book, but mine had a nifty little baseball card in it, and I'm wondering, is that you?
Well,
there's a picture of Harvey Blissberg.
Yes, it's amazing what a little bit of shoe polish on your temples can do.
Is that you?
And soft focus. Yes, that's me.
Wow.
That's me.
That's a nice card. I bet you're pretty happy with that.
I am. I went to a lot of trouble because we did a card the last time out, but this time I went to a little company here in Manhattan that manufactures professional baseball uniforms. And I created a Providence Jewel jersey, which I'm wearing there.
Uh-huh.
And I created a Providence Jewels logo and had a hat made. So I look somewhat professional.
Yeah,
except for the fact that my biceps, I think, are a bit small for a baseball player.
Well, yeah.
I should have had an implant, a bicep implant for the purposes of the card. But I'm trying to look as close to 30 as I can, and I don't know if I've even come within 10 years.
I think it looks pretty good. I was impressed when I saw it. And of course, it says you're Harvey Blissberg.
Yes, it says I'm Harvey Blissberg. I'm much cheaper than a model. It was just easier, you know. I didn't have a huge budget. I couldn't, you know, hire a model to. Anyway, and those cards have remained in print. You know, I see them on people's refrigerators still.
Well.
And it's a nice little promotional tool too, you know.
Well, I think we all dream of having our own baseball card, so I think this is pretty cool. I'm impressed.
Well, I can easily arrange for you to have one.
That's great. Send
me an appropriate photograph.
Very good.
Or
thank
just
you.
The headshot, and I'll crop you into mine.
Okay. My guest is R.D. Rosen. His book is Strike Three, You're Dead. It just came out a reissue on Walker. It's the first Harvey Blissberg mystery. If you've been listening, Harvey has just got the fifth one coming out in September, also published by Walker. Now, they didn't send me voluminous biographical materials on you, and I just detected a moment ago that you alluded to the fact that you did some writing for Saturday Night Live. Now, I'm not going to leave this avenue unexplored.
Okay.
What happened there? Was that during the period when Belushi was still on the program?
No, this was after Belushi. This was in 85, which you would know maybe as Dennis Miller's first year.
Okay.
The year that Nora Dunn started. I have another career in television. I mean, one reason I haven't churned out a mystery a year like some people is that I have done a lot of television and a lot of comedy, which is maybe a weird combination, you know, to write thrillers on the one hand and comedy on the other. But I actually started in public television in Boston doing satirical pieces.
GBH?
GBH. Uh-huh. I learned a huge amount about television there and was a correspondent and then an on-air person and producer and writer. And on the basis of some humor I did there, I was hired by Saturday Night Live, which turned out to be perhaps the single most traumatic work experience of my life. Let me tell you, if anybody out there is thinking of working for Saturday Night Live, make sure, first of all, that you really like working late into the night surrounded by takeout containers of Chinese food, lounging around on beat-up couches. It's a very collegiate kind of atmosphere. And I was in my 30s at the time, and I felt I was a little bit too old a dog to learn those tricks. Anyway, it was an interesting experience, but it is something, or was something, of a shark pit. Still is. It's a highly Darwinian environment there, trying to get stuff on the air. You know, the stakes are that high. And was there just for the one season. Went on to do some comedy for HBO and more comedy for PBS after that. There was Robert Krull, which hosted a show in the early 90s, a magazine show out of New York on PBS called Edge, for which I was a correspondent. And I've done humor for All Things Considered.
Oh, really?
My partner and I, yeah.
Now, what would you have done that we might remember for ATC?
We did a series, I think it was 93, we did a series of bits, you know, that lasted anywhere from 2 to 6 minutes, called, it's called Down the Dial, and what it was a parodies of different kinds of radio shows and TV shows, but all done as radio. You know, there was a chef who only cooked with squid. There was a game show called Which One's Bigger, in which radio listeners were asked to determine which object, you know, the one behind curtain one or two, was bigger without, of course, being able to see him. There was a show called Tick Talk, which is actually about Lyme ticks, but people kept calling in thinking it was another show, such as Teak Talk. They called and wanted to know about how to polish teak, or Tyke Talk. They were having problems with their toddlers. Anyway, it was a range of silly comedy, and I'm not sure why that didn't go on. I think maybe the people at ATC were a little bit ambivalent about humor whose purpose was to make you laugh out loud.
Harvey Blissberg is a pretty dry guy, but he's got a little, there's a little humor there just in his outlook. I mean, it's hard to hide that under a bushel basket.
No, I am who I am, and what I do with Harvey is I kind of give the, Harvey's like a setup guy.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's a very dry humor. He's a very watchful, almost zen-like detective. He waits, he watches. You know, a good detective is something like a shrink. You don't want to say too much. And so he gets a lot of the dry comebacks. The people, the characters around him tend to be more flagrant, you know, and funnier or weirder. So Harvey's just like the calm center of a chaotic world in which a crime has taken place.
In case you've just tuned in, this is the Book Nook. I'm Vic McCunis, and our guest today is R.D. Rosen, and his first Harvey Blissberg mystery has just been reissued by Walker. It's called Strike 3, You're Dead. He's written four subsequent books, and the newest one, the fifth, will be out in September. Now, you alluded to the plot of that one, and I got a little flash there of Jackie Robinson playing in Cincinnati the first time, or Hank Aaron trying to break the home run record. Sounds like a little racism there.
Yes, in fact, both Robinson and Aaron are mentioned in the book because this is the case of a black man in the year 2001 threatening the greatest baseball record ever, which is owned by a white man. And, you know, when something like that happens, or when Hank Aaron is threatening Babe Ruth, Babe Ruth himself had a bodyguard, much like Harvey bodyguards, this guy Moss Cooley. It's the kind of thing that that stimulates this not so latent racism in America. There are a lot of people out there, the same people who like to stand in behind correspondents on TV and jump up and down and wave and say hi, Mom, who just have to be noticed.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of people like that who, when something like this happens, when a black is threatening something that some white people perceive to be white property, have to write really ugly letters and leave ugly death threats and make ugly gestures. You know, racism, unfortunately, is not dead. And this is a book which talks about the national pastime and the national disgrace of racism. And the solution of the mystery has roots somewhat deep in the civil rights movement.
Mm.
All I can say about it.
And, of course, the civil rights movement, there were a lot of people active in the civil rights movement, including a lot of Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Harvey, who is one of those former Jewish baseball players. There were some great stars in Major League Baseball over the years who were Jewish.
Yes, in fact, I have a book here that someone once sent me recently called The Big Book of Jewish Baseball. And there is a little section on Harvey Blissberg. He's the only baseball player in the book who's fictional. But I thought that was a great tribute. But here, of course, is a picture of Sandy Koufax on the cover.
Uh-huh.
And then, I mean, it's amazing how many Jewish ball players there are and the amount of research these people did. I mean, some of these Jewish players just had a Jewish mother, and I think the ones that just had a Jewish father are also included, contrary to Jewish orthodoxy. But there was a time in the 20s and 30s, particularly, when a team like the New York Giants had three and sometimes four Jews in their starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Just as in professional basketball in the early days before the NBA, at times in the professional regional leagues, Jews made up as many as half the ballplayers.
Wow.
Because Jews then were still another immigrant group.
Sure.
You know, before the exodus to the suburbs. There were Italians, there were blacks, there were Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what happened, you know. I think Jews got more integrated faster, certainly, than blacks in this culture, and didn't see baseball as the same kind of career goal as they did in the, you know, the first generation of immigration.
Now, his name escapes me at the moment, but I think one of my favorite Jewish baseball players was the fella, I think he was a catcher who actually was a spy during World War II.
Mo Berg.
That's the guy.
Mo Berg, right. It was the subject of a book by Nicholas Davidoff, a biography that I read part of recently. Yeah, he was a fantastic, a shadowy character. In fact, in the new book, there's a reference to Mo Berg, because like Mo Berg, Harvey Blisberg does not like to talk to the press, keeps to himself. You know, Moberg ended up being a spy for the CIA, the OSS, and spoke many, many languages. A very shadowy figure.
And he was a good catcher.
He was an okay catcher. He was an okay catcher. He was a better spy, I think, than he was a catcher.
Well, it's really been a pleasure having you on the program.
Well, Vic, it's been great being on.
You've been listening to the best of the Book Nook on WYSO. That was R.D. Rosen, my only interview with him, recorded back in 2001. And his book, his first book in a series featuring Harvey Blisberg, had just been reissued. He originally began working on it in 1981. It won the Edgar Award in 1984. So that was 40 years ago when Strike Three, You're Dead, won the prestigious Edgar Award. And I dusted that one off because we're getting close to baseball season, and I've been thinking a little bit about baseball. And he mentioned during that interview that back in 2001, with the escalating salaries that baseball players were getting and just all the money in the sport, that what had once been America's pastime, a sport where people without a lot of money could still go to a ball game, those days were fading back in 2001. Well, here we are, 23 years later, and it's a lot worse. At the time I interviewed him, Alex Rodriguez had just gotten a massive salary, and things were headed in that direction. He mentioned that for a family to go to a ball game in 2001, it might cost them a couple hundred dollars with parking and vending and just the tickets. And now, think about it. If it was $200 back then, it must be $500 by now. I mean, it's mind-boggling. So they've really priced out the average American. And that's another reason why I have some issues with baseball. It's not just the mega contracts. These are great players. But when I saw the amount of money that the Dodgers were willing to pay a pitcher from Japan, a great player, a superstar, who is also a really great hitter, he won't even be pitching next season, and they're paying him gazillions of dollars. It just really kind of gets to me. But hey, I'm old-fashioned. You've been listening to the best of the Book Nook on WYSO. It's always a pleasure to have you out there listening. Once again, that was R.D. Rosen talking about his novel, Strike 3, You're Dead. For the best of the Book Nook, batter up.